Hello, you are listening to the Burst Ball Scottish Football Podcast with me, your host, Johnny Clark. It's number 212. Yes, we've really made it this far. And we've got quite a nice panel, probably the biggest panel we've had in a while, actually. Four of us on today. And we'll start with everybody's favourite, Kelly Cal. Introduce yourself.
Ah, thank you very much. I don't know if I'm everybody's favourite, but what I will say is, and I will say it like I did again, this must be another record that we've set. In that two podcasts in a row with no Old Firm Venom.
Yeah.
And I'll just say it again as well. It is lovely, isn't it?
Easy. Yep, everybody's second favourite podcaster, Lewis Birrell.
You alright, Johnny? Pleasure to be back. Just getting over the depression after Hibs versus Motherwell on Sunday, but glad to be here.
Somebody who's not getting over depression. And I was going to say third favourite podcaster. We'll go fourth. It's Ryan Crombie. How you doing, Ryan?
Delighted to be on this podcast, Johnny.
You're slightly less depressed, as I say there, because Aberdeen scored in the last minute. However, it was somewhat of a depressing performance, wasn't it, from your side?
From Casey, to be honest. Just wants to see Aberdeen fail this season.
Nah, it's all just a big laugh, man.
Anyway, Ryan.
Angry.
Aberdeen's performance, it wasn't great. Especially in the first half, but to be honest, just the entire game was poor until the last 5 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I think the main thing you can take away from the game is that Aberdeen are going to win the league now. No, I mean, I can't deny that Aberdeen's performance was absolutely hoaching. It was just so bad. Whether that was a hangover from Thursday night, I mean, to an extent, yes. I just think that the performance levels and energy levels weren't there. But I think that a lot of the talk about this game's kind of been blown out of proportion, just because I would say you can't really base how a team's going to fare upon one game, especially after the sort of exertions that Aberdeen had against Burnley, just with extra time and all that, and had a few injury problems as well. But I think the fact that they managed to dig out a point from the worst possible of circumstances shows sort of almost even a bit of improvement upon last season, where I'm convinced we would have lost that game last year. Perfect example being even when Rangers went down to 10 men when we were drawing last season, we lost the game. So, I mean, slight sort of differences here and there, but I think it can only get better from an Aberdeen perspective. I think you'd be hard pushed to sort of play as badly as that again. Over a lengthy period of time, and I've seen enough from the performances against Burnley to suggest that we won't be seeing that kind of Aberdeen too much this season.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, Callum, how Aberdeen have gone from, you know, nearly beating a Premier League side and drawing with them over two legs to just being, you know, shite in pretty much everyone's opinion within 3 days. It's incredible how fast people's opinions can change, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose, but like I say, I'm with Ryan. I think it might have been a bit overhyped. Well, not overhyped, blown out of proportion, rather. Don't get me wrong, I was one of the first to kind of have a go at Aberdeen. I was quite disappointed with them on Sunday. But at the end of the day, it's a telling sign that if they don't even play that well, when they can still get a point against a good Rangers side, because I can already see straight away this Rangers team do look a lot better than the one in last season. I thought they looked a lot more organised, because I think that was telling, even though I think a lot down to Aberdeen's lack of creativity, but I mean, you know, how many clear-cut chances were there against 10 men? I mean, that tells you everything you need to know. Rangers looked a lot more compact in, let's say, a better side than last year, but I wouldn't read too much into Aberdeen's performance either, I think. And I certainly wouldn't read into Gerrard's comments about how there's Rangers are a class above Aberdeen. I certainly didn't see that.
Mental.
I'm sure we'll come on to more Gerrard comments. But,
let's just go on to that now then, the Gerrard comments. We'll give you the first shout, Lewis, because you've not said anything on the game yet. Rangers have been mistreated for years in Scottish football. What are your thoughts on this? How disgraceful has their mistreatment been?
Well, I think MD, who talks to me quite a bit, will know that I think the exact opposite of that, to be honest. I'll happily tell you that I think the Old Firm get, both Celtic and Rangers and fair share get, I think they get a lot of favourable decisions in their favour, particularly in their home matches and their matches at Hampden. So I think for any manager from either side of the Old Firm to come out and say that is just absolute nonsense. But the Old Firm do, Celtic and Rangers, it's been more Celtic you would associate it with, but the Old Firm do have a certain kind of paranoia about them, and I think by Gerrard coming out and saying that, he's just sort of fueling that fire within the Rangers support, isn't he? Just getting them fired up, trying to create a sort of siege mentality, you know, the old kind of Alex Ferguson thing, that the whole world is against us, as if they didn't have that already, you know. But I think for them to come out with things like that is just ludicrous, to be honest. But nevertheless,
is that something that you two agree with? Because it's a debate that we've had several times amongst the sort of non-Old Firm and the Old Firm supporters on the podcast. You know, is there, even if it's a bias that's not deliberate, is that a thing? Is there a bias towards the Old Firm, or, as Stephen Gerrard suggests, is there a bias against, or, well, he suggested obviously Rangers, but is there a bias against the Old Firm?
It's a human nature thing. There has to be, because if you think about it, if you're a referee, you can have the best intentions in the world and all the rest of it, but if there's a decision that that's quite kind of on the line, it's a big decision, you're not sure either way, you've got your so many millions of Old Firm fans worldwide, and they're playing the likes of Hamilton, who've maybe all in all got 7,000-8,000 fans, you know. You're always going to slightly lean to the side of, you know, you're going to take the side of the multi-millions of people, because ultimately, you make a decision against Hamilton Accies, I'll get a few moans and groans for a day or two after it, but
exactly.
You know how obsessive some sections of your Old Firm support can be, and just big clubs in general, that, you know, if you make a decision against an Old Firm team that's deemed bad, I mean, they will hold that against you forever. You can look back at Mike McCurry, you can look at Bobby Madden, the Now, people like that. Craig, who was the one a few years ago who got put through the court and everything, and he had to, was it McDonald? Somebody McDonald?
Dougie McDonald.
Aye, it was against Rangers, that he made some decision, wasn't it, Tannadice?
Oh, I know, it was Celtic, Dundee United, Celtic. And the linesman gave the penalty and then he lied about it and all that, aye, all that stuff.
Aye.
I remember that, yeah.
The Israelis.
So if you give it against the smaller team, you know, you get a few moans and groans for a couple of days, but then, you know, they would rather that over making their life kind of a misery over years for the Old Firm fans, you know.
Is that an opinion that you agree with, Ryan and Callum?
Aye, definitely. I mean, I'd say that side of things, yes. I mean, I would say that's almost a separate argument. I would say Gerrard's sort of comments stand alone, are ridiculous in themselves. I mean, let's remind ourselves that Rangers were actually awarded a penalty in the game, and his player was red carded for kicking out. Which, I mean, let's be serious, if it was the other way around and Scott McKenna hadn't been sent off for kicking Morelos, Stephen Gerrard would be the first one on the referee's door asking why he wasn't sent off. So I think you're kind of spot on suggesting that he's obviously been briefed by those at Rangers that a siege mentality is what works best and what brings the supporters out. For whatever reason, I mean, everyone will know my opinion of what they think of that, but it's just, it comes across as a bit classless and slightly embarrassing as well.
Yeah, I would
agree. So yes, I mean, Gerrard might be pandering to the Rangers fans, but he's just, could even be his own worst enemy, given the fact that teams will look at those comments and sort of almost think that Gerrard's been a bit disrespectful to Scottish football as a whole, and they'll use that going into games against them. And if he's going to continue to be like that, then I hope they do.
And quickly, Callum, is that a comment that you agree with as well, what Lewis said originally?
No, absolutely. I think that, obviously I'll try and be quick because I know that the two guys have basically summed it up quite well, and I'll probably just be reiterating what they've said, but totally 100% human nature at times, and it's not even that the Old Firm would get the big decisions, it's more that the smaller teams are easier to turn down you know what I mean? Like a penalty claim, it's easier to turn down if you're a Kilmarnock going to Parkhead or Ibrox, or if you're a Dundee United going to Ibrox or Parkhead. You go down the box, it's easier to turn down, knows the fact that, and then if it's up the other end, it's harder to turn down. It's human nature. Secondly, Gerrard's comments are ridiculous. I wouldn't even mind them as much. I would still laugh, but I wouldn't even mind them as much. Say he'd been in the job 6 months, you know, like, he would then have some basis to talk about the game, but he just looks petty. It's his first domestic game, and I was disappointed because I've actually been quite impressed with the way Gerrard conducts himself, and I was really disappointed to hear about those comments because I actually do like Gerrard. I've always liked him as a player, and he's conducted himself really well, but those comments were just spitting the dummy in your first domestic game, and as Ryan said, every team's just got to hold it against them now. And he's made himself a laughing stock, whereas he could have come out and even worded it differently. But like, listen, we didn't get some of the decisions didn't go our way the day, but hey, we still had 10 men, came to Pittodrie and got a point. Disappointed not to get 3, but we still came away with a point. We've got to use that to our advantage instead of coming out with conspiracy theories. And I'm pretty sure anybody that knows me on the podcast know that I like conspiracy theories, but one that I don't buy into is the referees are biased against Rangers and biased against Celtic, and if anything, I would say it's the opposite. And I don't even think that it's a conspiracy that they go to hurt other teams. As Lewis said, it's just human nature. I would happily admit that I would be easily swayed by things like that. So, in short, it's all the nonsense, and there's absolutely no conspiracy whatsoever against Rangers, and for that matter, Celtic.
So what we're saying here is that Gerrard is absolutely... He's mental because he thinks there's a conspiracy against the old firm, but you guys are perfectly all right to say that there's one in the exact opposite direction. That's what I like.
Didn't say that.
No, I wouldn't go as far to say there's a conspiracy, but I think if you're... There's not a conspiracy, but there is a leaning toward... Yeah. You know, if it's as Casey says, it's not necessarily what they give, it's what they turn down, you know. I've not seen these stats, but I would imagine if you look at statistics for who gets most penalty, you know, it will be Celtic and Rangers that are right up there, you know. How many penalties get given for the likes of Motherwell, Kilmarnock, Hamilton, St Mirren, Ibrox and Parkhead? I wouldn't think it's many, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly. It's easier to turn down opposed to give decisions. That's my big thing. And I'm not saying there's a conspiracy, as I say, it's not deliberate. It's human nature. And I genuinely believe that. I 100% believe that. And I think anybody that says it, they're not going to be intimidated by 50,000 fans. There's no such thing as home advantage then, because that's what it is. It's, you get intimidated going to Ibrox and Parkhead because it's... They're brilliant grounds, brilliant atmospheres, and like you've got 40,000-50,000 folks shouting at you. It gets into your head, and anybody that says that Disney is an absolute liar, because you even feel it in the away end. It gets into your head a bit, like you have a heart attack every time they go to the park. It's human nature, and anybody that says otherwise is a liar.
What's funny for me about the whole thing is the fact you can actually draw parallels between Gerrard's comments and Kashinya's comments on their first trips to Pittodrie. Kashinya coming out saying that Aberdeen were reaching the end of their cycle and that Rangers would finish third. Gerrard saying that Rangers were a class above Aberdeen. Aberdeen didn't have an idea against them, and which isn't really overly true. And then this whole conspiracy theory thing against Rangers and referees, it's something that you'd expect to hear from Kashinya, and we all know how that turned out. So, as Casey said, I was impressed with how Gerrard had been conducting himself, but he just seems to have thrown all that out the window. For what reason, I don't know. It wasn't gaining anything. I think the Rangers fans were still buying into what he was doing, so don't really understand it. Bit strange from Gerrard, and he's only created more problems by doing it.
I think, in fairness, just quickly, before we round it off, in fairness to Gerrard, it's an experience from him there. That's what I totally think it is. I think if this was a year into the job, he wouldn't have come out with comments like that. He's raw still as a manager, and I think it's just a bit of an experience, and you'll see him mature again, because I don't doubt that. But the comments totally lacked class, but I'd say Gerrard will go on to will name out those mistakes again, and will be and conduct himself the way he has done previously. It will all come with experience, I don't doubt that.
Aye, you're definitely right, Casey, because since he's come into the job, there can be no doubt he's handled himself really, really well, considering the fact it's his first job. When you look at the magnitude of the job, the pressure coming about him, I mean, so far, whether you like him or not, whatever you think it, he has led by example, and he's taken it on his stride, really. But as you say yourself, I think maybe after a kind of high-profile match, quite a kind of tense affair, big rivalry and all the rest of it, I think that is maybe the first time you've seen his experience come to show a wee bit.
Yep.
Right, I'm just looking for a quick answer from each of you here. Morelos, red card, yes or no, Callum?
I don't want to turn into a swimmy sketch here. Yes or no, but I think that letter of the law, yes, but I think it was a daft decision. But I think that letter of the law, it is a red card, but I personally think it was a mistake doing it, considering the magnitude of the game. And McKenna doesn't even get down, say, but it's McKenna. McKenna hits the deck, he's every right to go off, but McKenna doesn't even want him off. He just gets on with it, and I think it was it kind of ruined the spectacle a wee bit.
Ryan?
Yes.
Lewis?
Yeah, I agree very much with what Casey said. I think it's one of those ones you can see it given, you can see it not given, but if you go by the book, then aye, it would get sent off. But I think what's quite important to notice about it is that, because McKenna had been having wee kind of bites at him before that, didn't he? So I think there's a kind of widespread tactic, I think, where people are going out and they know that if you get under Morelos, his skin, wind him up early doors, you've got every chance that he'll self-destruct almost and get himself sent off.
Second part of this question is, I agree with you. I think letter of law is a red card, but as I say, he just basically flicks out at him. There's really not much in it, but I would say yes.
So we're just not following the letter of the law anymore.
Rules are rules, as they say. Others say rules are there to be broken, but nah, it's there's rules and there's how you referee a match, and both don't.
Common sense is rule 1.1, Ryan.
Great.
And the second part of this question is, will this, because a 2-game ban for a straight red, will this be overturned?
Yes.
Callum.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And Lewis?
I suppose going with my kind of theory earlier on, I would think seeing as it's Rangers, there's quite a high chance it might be.
Yeah. Being influenced by the big crowds as they make their 3-day long decision.
Okay.
Right, we'll move on, and the next incident in the game, the next big talking point, is the penalty. And for me, there's a lot more to this, because having watched it the first time, I thought it was actually offside. I thought Koulibaly's offside. Then there's the, obviously, does Ball make a great deal of contact? And then there's obviously, if he does make contact, is it a red card? So we'll come to you first, Ryan. You should be able to give us a clear answer, being the Aberdeen fan. What was your view on that?
Well, at the game, it was kind of, everyone was like, oh, what's happened here? Because it all happened so quickly, so fast. The ball was just sort of kind of pinging about in the box. Somebody went down, then they pointed to the spot. But having watched it back, I would say that Koulibaly is offside, so it should never have got to the stage where the referee had the decision to make. But then, benefit of the doubt to the linesman, because there's absolutely no chance that he's got much of a chance in making that correct decision, just because it all happened so fast. Penalty, yes, I would say. Pulled him back. Red card. Was Windass definitely getting onto the ball?
Yeah.
I don't think he was. I don't think he was getting there.
Yeah, so, I mean, neither did I. So I don't think it would be a red card, but I would say it was definitely a penalty.
Yeah, do you agree with that, Callum?
I think it was a penalty and a red card.
You think he was getting to the ball?
Yeah, I genuinely do.
And Lewis, agree? Who do you agree with? Red, penalty, no penalty, red, offside?
Yeah, well, listen, obviously I only saw the kind of start of the game, and then I raced out to go through to Edinburgh for our game, but I've seen the highlights of it back. I've only seen the penalty sort of once, but my instinct was it was a penalty. I don't know about a red card. I think that would have been a wee bit harsh, but I do think it was a penalty, yeah.
I think in regards to the way the game was refereed, because of the early sending off, that's why I think it was a red card, because I know two wrongs don't make a right and all that, but game management and stuff, and I think that because of the way the referee gave, well, to be fair, it was the linesman that gave the red card initially. It wasn't Clancy that people need to remember.
Mm-hmm.
He was signalled to send him off. So I think because of that ridiculous, kind of stupid decision in regards to game management, I think it was a red card.
It's good to see a bit of disagreement on this one. My opinion is that it's offside, but when it comes to the actual decision, if you ignore the offside, I agree with Ryan. I think it's a penalty and probably a booking. I don't actually think he's getting to the ball. But again, that's one that's impossible to tell. And it's definitely deliberate. So if you think he is getting to the ball, then it's a red. If you don't, it's not. So it's a kind of the case of who thinks he's getting to the ball, I suppose, which nobody really knows. We'll move on from Aberdeen Rangers and we'll go to your team, Callum. Kilmarnock, starting off where they finished last season, a comfortable win at home to start the league campaign. It's a far cry from the start of last season where you were beaten 4-0 by Dundee, was it? Or was that the season before?
Jesus, that was a lock era, man. Come on.
Was it?
last year they could be... Still get beat. We could beat St. Johnston, but that was a pretty.
Oh
pretty
right, was it St. Johnston again? And it was. I think the crowd was. I remember that actually, because the crowd I think was up by about 1,000 on that game. Same fixture, obviously.
Yeah.
So again, you can see that the fans are buying into the Clark magic.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. First of all, in the crowd, you make a good point there. Don't get me wrong, slightly disappointed. I thought it would have been minimum kind of 5,000. But end of the day, when you put it in context to the exact same game last year, it's up just about 1,000. So, I mean, I think any team would welcome those kind of increases in crowds. It's got to take time. Nothing changes overnight. Crowds are coming back. Season ticket sales are up. So it was good. Game itself, first half was pretty poor. Obviously, I was in the press for it, so I gave away my season tickets. I was just name dropping that was in the press, you know.
Robin Hood,
not working for the Birchball, unfortunately.
I am very much Robin Hood. Sorry, what did you say there, Johnny?
I said not working for the Birchball, unfortunately.
Absolutely not. But one day. But thank you for your Robin Hood comment, Ryan. I think we all know of my my kind of Robin Hood instincts, etc. One of the ways that I do stay in a forest. But no, that's Johnny. No, anyway, right. Continue. In regards to the game, first half pretty poor. I said in my match report, Jordan Jones no in it at all in the first half. Second half, absolute live wire, different class. And Jones absolutely ripped this guy Comrie last season as well. So I think this guy must be having nightmares about Jones, because Jones was just beating him every single time, putting the ball through his legs, outside, inside, excellent. And no, it was a really, really professional performance. I was really proud of the team, because a lot of question marks are over our kind of, you know, we're a better team when we have to sit and then counter-attack. I've never had away for that fact. We're a very good defensive team, and then we create problems going forward in the counter. So this was a good test, because St Johnstone sat with a back five and not even three centre-halves, because I've got nothing against three centre-halves. Nothing against however teams want to play, for that matter. But three centre-halves and two wing-backs, that's a system I kind of like. But St Johnstone literally played a back five, as if they were like...
Extremely deep back
it.
Five as well.
Oh, crazy. Like, this is Kilmarnock we're talking about.
Wonder what they'll play when they go to Parkhead away, you know?
Exactly, you know what I mean?
Two goalies on and good, all that.
Exactly, but I think that's a good sign for us, you know what I mean? Teams are maybe starting to kind of fear a bit coming to Rugby Park, and we're talking about the home form. I mean, bear in mind, we got our first home win of the season last year in December. First game, first win, you know what I mean? It tells you everything you need to know. It shows what a good manager can do, and Steve Clark picking off for where he left off. And I was delighted. I think we'll keep Jones at least until January, and then he'll probably go for nothing when we've been out of contract. But I would rather keep him and get performances out of him than lose him. I think there'll still be time for a couple of players to come in once English window shuts. I think we discussed this in the last podcast, so we'll get into it, but I'm just going to say I think there'll still be business to be done at Killeen, and we'll go from strength to strength. So no, great performance, and against a tough what could potentially be a tough opposition.
Just a quick word on Njoli. Came off the bench, scored a screamer.
DJ.
what are your thoughts on him? Can he be a pivotal player this season?
Yeah, I think so. The guy's got pace to burn, which is good because, again, I'm just talking about Jones a full podcast here, but we miss that when Jones isn't in the team, because Jones is just so naturally quick. So it's good having a guy like Njoli who can come on and then just have that total natural pace. You seen that with the chance that Jones hit the crossbar? He didn't even break a sweat, but he got the ball and he had the ball on the left, and then the St Johnstone right centre arse. Right centre half sitting thinking, the guy's only one footed, so he's not got to come on outside. And Jolly just one touch, run on man, like, doesn't even break sweat. Cross the ball into the box, comes back at Jones, hits the crossbar. But the guy's just got total natural pace, and you can see he's got natural ability as well with that. That strikes are absolutely wonderful. The ball hits the back of the net before the keeper dives. It's different class, and he kicked off for where he left off in pre season. Pre season, Betfred Cuppy. He banged in 3 goals, so hopefully more of that to come, but he's obviously still raw, but working with Chris Boyd day and do it's not got to do him any harm.
Talking about St Johnstone, we say that they came to Rugby Park with a back five, and this is, you know, St Johnstone and Kilmarnock, this is, you know, they should be St Johnstone should be competing for top six. Obviously Killy were there last year. Is that a worrying sign early doors for you, Ryan, for St Johnstone?
We went over it in our sort of prediction podcast, but I predicted a tough season for St Johnstone this year, and I feel justified. Obviously, one game in, so you can't really can't really make final judgments. But I do think that St Johnstone will struggle a lot this season. And
what is it they're lacking? Why do you think they're going to struggle?
I don't know. I think defensively they might not be as good, even though they're setting up
exactly
as you see.
That's the point, aye, because they set up defensively and still didn't look that rock solid. Sorry to button Ryan, but that's all I was just got to say. They set up defensively and still didn't look good defensively.
Yes.
I think Ricky Foster was missing, if I'm right in saying, for St Johnstone, who's obviously a big miss, and
that's why the score was only 2-0.
I quite like Foster. There was after the St Johnstone Falkirk game, and one of the guys in the press said, I'm getting Ricky Foster, do you want to speak to him? And then the guy did a full interview post-match about the game with him for about 4 minutes, and then did another interview basically with him about Rangers against Osijek, because he used to play for Rangers, and it lasted like 8.5 minutes. It's just him talking to Ricky Foster. But you'd be surprised how well the guy speaks. He's really, really intelligent.
Good to see
psychology degree.
Good to see this is just a name dropping podcast of Friends Association members.
What are you saying, Cal?
No, I'm just saying, I'm not surprised about that at all, Johnny, but that's only because I was on Sports Sound about 3 years ago, just there, and he was talking about the kind of.
3 years ago, just there?
Aye, like, as in this, the closed season, Grampus closed season, sorry, during the summer break, before pre-season, sorry, why am I speaking riddles here? Anyway, he was on like that, whilst there was no competitive football on in Scotland, and he was talking about just about his kind of experience at Rangers the last time, and the kind of abuse he was getting, you know, it was wife and family, and just, you know, people come up to him in shops in front of his kids and giving him dogs abuse. But in that, he was talking about how he was doing a degree in psychology. So I'm not kind of, I don't doubt that he is kind of a bit more switched on than one would assume with a football player. I quite like him, and I always thought he was a decent player as well. It's a hard time, mainly because he's experienced at Rangers, but I think he's a good right back.
He must be quite switched on, because he's done well to get himself involved with the multi-millionaire Amy McDonald, didn't he? So
correct.
Done well there, right? That will supplement his St Johnstone wages nicely.
Talking about name dropping, one of my mates was at their wedding in Las Vegas just there in the summer.
I like that top suffering we've heard yet. That's a good gin, that.
Aye, end the podcast, to be honest.
No, just in terms of St Johnstone, I think what you partially saw last year and what I think you'll see again this year is that I think they are in a sort of period of transition at the moment over the last couple of seasons, because when St Johnstone were up there and they were finishing top six consistently, and they were up in Europe as well, they had that kind of core. You know, they had your kind of Alan Manus, your Fraser Wright, Stephen Anderson, Dave McKay. You know, they had a really strong kind of core to the team, and they would only sign one or two players every summer that would generally come in and enhance that. Obviously, you've seen Dave McKay's going away into coaching, so is Fraser Wright. They've still got Stephen Anderson, but he's really cracking on now. Well, it looks like he's been at 40 for about 10 years, but but I think you just St Johnstone are just finding it hard to sort of get a new core to their team, if you like, because it happened with Motherwell in a sense as well a few years ago. They had a core of players they relied on so heavily, and now that's been sort of broken up a wee bit, and it's like they don't really know where to go, you feel.
Talking about not knowing where to go, Motherwell. And that might be the poorest link I've ever heard in my life. But we're moving on to Motherwell anyway.
Well, there's only one place that we looked like we knew about going, and it was Route 1.
Thanks for saving that. Thank you for saving me there. You were at the game, Lewis.
I was.
What went wrong? Just a case of everything going wrong? 2-0 down at the break, obviously, and it was pretty much game over, wasn't it?
Well, listen, first of all, I think you've got to acknowledge that Hibs were really, really good, you know. Mm-hmm. Hibs, you knew they were going to be good. You thought, in a way, that they might be a wee bit leggy coming off the European game. I think that's what I was sort of hoping for anyway. But it seemed to actually have the kind of opposite effect on them. Hibs came out and they were absolutely flying. I mean, they looked like they'd just picked right back up from where they left it on Thursday night. Whereas we looked, you would have thought that was our first competitive game. You know, you wouldn't have thought we had been through a Betfred Cup campaign. Everything about us last year that our success was built on, being hard to beat, the way we played, you know, getting in people's faces, being physical, some say over physical at times away from home, and generally causing problems for the Hibs and the Aberdeens and the Hearts of the league, we just didn't do. You know, we sat off Hibs in the first half. Hibs really, really targeted us out in the wide areas. You know, David Gray was pushing right up, he was playing as a winger at times, and we just didn't deal with it at all. We just, you know, we were standing off, we were watching them, and you got the impression that we were just waiting on a Hibs opener, to be honest, and then it came, and you thought, right, we need to get in at half-time 1-0 now, and they didn't do that, whereas, you know, last season, they would have got in 1-0 at half-time, they might have changed it a bit, as Robinson did a lot last year. I mean, there was a lot of poor first halves for us last year, and it was only when Robinson went down and sort of changed it at half-time that we came out and snatched a draw, went on to win it or whatever. Obviously, as you say yourself though, Johnny, when we lose the second goal, that is the game done pretty much. Come out in the second half, and they tried to play a wee bit more football. They brought Bigger Man on, who's obviously a real natural footballer. But yeah, it's all very easy to do that when you're 2-3-0 down, and it doesn't really matter. Mm. But I think the team was set up with, I mean, all of our sort of creative players were on the bench. Admittedly, we've got Craig Tanner injured, which isn't a help either, but we weren't really set up with any football in us. In the rare periods we did have the ball, we didn't look comfortable on it at all. We didn't even look a threat in the counter. So the way we set up, really it was evident after 15-20 minutes that it would only be a stroke of luck if we get a draw out of that game.
You said he didn't change, but he spent last season changing a lot of things. One thing he did change on Sunday was he brought on Danny Johnson, probably the most unlucky guy in Edinburgh on Sunday, and he missed about 6 chances, didn't he? Hit the post. Had a goal ruled out for handball, which seemed really harsh as well, but he looked like a live wire.
He certainly did. He's a wee bit different for the strikers we've got. Obviously, Curtis Main, Connor Salmon and Ryan Bowman are essentially a very, very similar type of striker. Opinion varies whether you think they're good or effective or not, but they are all very similar. Whereas Danny Johnson, yeah, you know, I wouldn't say by any means when he came on, it wasn't brilliant, but it was something a bit different, and he was much more effective up there with Connor Salmon than Main was. He actually enjoyed taking the ball into his feet, played with his back to goal. He could keep the ball and kind of jockey folk off a wee bit, turn and shoot. But, you know, whereas Connor Salmon and Curtis Main, you know, when they get the ball in, they're just looking to pump it out to the wings or put it back behind. You know, they're not looking to take anyone on. He looked like the wee sort of poaching striker, actually, that we've been missing. Even although it was quite disappointing because some of his finishing was quite poor. And when you think any of your Martin Boyles, Ollie Shaws, McLaren, Canberra, all the rest of it would have had those chances for breakfast that Danny Johnson was faced with. But I think there's no doubt he is the future. A front two of Main and Salmon definitely isn't the way to go. Whether you think you'd be better off with Main or Salmon, I'd be tempted at the moment strangely enough to say, I would start him up there with Connor Salmon the next time, but he is the way forward for us, he has to start.
What are your thoughts on Salmon? He seems to be everybody's tip to have a good season, and I remember a couple of seasons ago I tipped him to score 20 and he scored, season. I think, 2. Is it going to be similar for him again this season, or do you think he'll really make an impact with Motherwell?
He came into us and, you know, at the time it was disappointing, let's be honest. I mean, you were getting a striker in, and you knew roughly the profile of striker Robinson would go for. He'd be big, he'd be physical, he'd be a target man, but you were expecting, as the way we've gone over the years, to get someone for the lower leagues of down south, or maybe even somebody for the lower leagues of Scotland making a step up, you know, whatever. But when you heard it was Connor Salmon, then very quickly within there been speculation of it being him, it was signed, you know. So yeah, it was quite disappointing, but then in the Betfred Cup games he did actually score a couple of goals against Queen of the South in particular. He looked really good, and you thought, aye, well, you know, we'll give him a chance. You know, you've got to, once he signs, you can be disappointed as you like, but you've got to give him a fair crack at the bit once he signs. I was kind of just indifferent towards him before Sunday there, but on Sunday it has to be said that it was dreadful for us. I thought, for a guy who has made a career off getting up and winning headers, I mean, he won nothing. He was very, very immobile, I thought, which in against Queen of the South, he was actually shifting himself about and he was looking like a right handful, but he was very, very static against Hibs. He wasn't getting about at all, and that didn't help Curtis Main next to him either. But and then obviously you saw it got deemed offside, but if you saw Salmon's chance at the end, that header that he put past the post, I mean, that was absolutely criminal for a centre forward, I thought. Don't get me wrong, Salmon might still end up being one of our main strikers this year, and if he is, fine, we've got to judge Robinson's judgement because he's done well so far. But there's absolutely no doubt a front pairing of Connor Salmon and Curtis Main up front, and you're as well not turning up, you know, Danny Johnson, or when he's fit, Ryan Bowman, Craig Tanner, got to be up there as well, because Salmon and Bowman, they're far, far too similar.
Motherwell made Hibs made 3 changes from the team that qualified against Asteras. No sign of Cam Berry, but Ollie Shaw came in, Callum, and he's only 19. He was at Stenhousemuir a couple of years ago, but he seems to be quite a talent, and it just shows the depth that Hibs have got, doesn't it?
No, absolutely. When you've got young guys like that coming through who are doing the business, he took his goal really well. Firstly, what a magnificent pass for John McGinn. To tee him up, but nah, he does it. It looks like he's got a big future ahead of him. When he first came into the team, I wasn't too sure. It kind of reminded me like I don't know what kind of Danny Galbraith or something, you know, that have. Well, I know Galbraith had a bit of pedigree before, but you know, just kind of nothing kind of player, like, didn't really know what his strengths were in that, but no, he certainly came onto a game and he scored a few goals towards the end of last year, and obviously started this year by getting off the mark in the first game. So basically just your spot on in regards to the depth that they've got, that can bring in these young guys as well who have got to do the business, and we certainly won't let them down, whereas you've got your Kimberries and McLarens and all these guys in front of them as well. So nah, it's exciting time to be a Hibs fan, because David Lewis, obviously, Motherwell would have been a bit disappointed, but I think Hibs played some terrific stuff, and when they get going, they're a wonderful team to watch. But I wouldn't read too much into Motherwell's performance. I know Lewis can get a better analysis than I can, but I think Motherwell will be alright, and I think they showed signs in the second half that they'll create chances, and particularly the guy Johnson looked good.
Well, that's what we've been good at the last couple of years. That has been our strength, is... I mean, when Matt McGee came back in and we had a kind of strong end to that season, and even last season we were good as well. Part of our sort of... Yes, is that chocolate Matt McGee at you?
Must be, man. I wonder who's laughing.
Hero around these parts. No, but part of a big thing for us has always been a sort of bounce-back ability, because we've always taken quite heavy... Even in our good seasons under McCall and everything, we've never been a stranger to a 4-0, a 5-0, a 6-0 even at times. But we're generally very, very good at regrouping. Yeah, indeed. But... Ah, well, we followed that one up with a nice 5-0 defeat, so excuse that, but we're generally pretty good at bouncing back for these sort of disappointments and regrouping, and that has been our strength over the last few years, so you can only hope with Lanarkshire derby coming up on Saturday that will really motivate them to get the first 3 points on the board, because it's badly needed with Rangers the next week as well.
We'll move on to Hearts, just across Edinburgh, across your home city, Ryan, and a quite impressive victory for them. But the first thing I'm going to ask, I don't know if you know the answer. Why is Stephen McLean playing on artificial pitches now when he didn't at St Johnstone at all?
Because Craig Levine has incriminating photos of him.
My goodness sakes.
Forced him to play.
Excellent.
Well, I'd imagine because he likes money. Stevie's cracking on and he'll be retiring shortly. He needs to make hay while the sun shines. I think that's it.
He's probably getting paid. It must have been something. Bonus or something there, because he's never.
It must have been in his contract or something.
Aye, I don't. It's a serious answer. I don't know. It's very strange.
Well, Tommy Wright was just
that. It'll probably be something. You'll probably think there was something along the lines of that Hearts have come up with some sort of strategy somewhere. Managing his body during the week or the week after when he plays in these astro tough pitches, and it'll, he's he'll only play a certain number of games on them or something. But there's a physio department will probably have some sort of strategy for keeping him healthy, but being able to play on them. I would think.
A Hearts, as I say, with a convincing 4-1-1, Peter Herring with a double, one of Hearts' many summer signings. Is there potential at Hearts, Ryan? Could they become a good team this season?
Potential for what?
Potential to become a good team. Potential to potentially to potentially team. Qualify for Europe this season.
No. I mean, yes, there is the potential. I think we need to, as we've kind of said for a lot of other games, need to kind of take a step back. And you can't really judge these teams on the first game. In fact, I would almost say the result is more of an indictment of Hamilton. Just because some of the defending absolutely atrocious, but I mean you have to score the goals when you get the chances, and Hart's done that. So they'll certainly be confident that they can take. They certainly will be confident after going away from home on the first day of the season and winning 4-1, especially after going a goal down. And it can only be a good thing, especially bedding all these new guys into the club. And I think that will still take a bit of time. I think Hearts might be a bit erratic this season, just because you have that sort of large influx of players again. Hearts will be erratic, and you could very well see them following up that kind of performance with one that's a bit desperate. Short answer, I'm not holding out much hope for Hearts.
Talking about Hamilton Accies, I've just seen on Twitter Hamilton have signed a guy called Delphin Tjembe, previously in the Danish league. Erik Svechenko's comment saying you're getting a great player, always fancied him in the Danish Super League. There's then a good sign that he seems to be a good player. However, the next comment's from Stuart Douglas, who says, it's the steward from Saturday, pwned you, and tags his mate. I don't really know what's going on there. If that's true, then... It's not true. There's no way it's true, but if it is true, that's the most ridiculous thing that's ever
maybe
happened.
Maybe they did what Rangers said a couple of years ago, remember, when they had a transfer embargo. And they brought in like Cammy Bell and that as like a gardener and all that, but so that they could train him that, but they weren't allowed to sign until like August 31st or September 1st. So obviously Hamilton have brought this guy in as a steward in order to get the deal over the line.
Brilliant.
Just get this image now, Cammy Bell at an allotment.
Aye, I was going to make some kind of joke there about his full punch, but I don't even know where it started at, so...
orange patch or something at the back, no? The orange patch at Ibrox, I'd have thought it.
Well, if he's any good as his fellow stewards, he'll be letting everything past him this season.
Jesus. Except the steward that tried to stop me getting on the pitch in the pitch invasion against Falkirk in 2010.
Just two quick points for our Hearts point of view. A question each for you, Callum and Lewis. Callum,
neglected
Ik Piazu he seems to be a real handful. I mean, did you see him against Inverness? Because he just completely destroyed the two Inverness centre halves.
No,
he's in a big mass. You take this question then, Lewis.
Well, I think he, against Inverness, obviously I watched him and he looked absolutely brilliant that day. It was a shame. What's funny?
No, I'm just laughing that Casey had no idea the question directed to him and then you've just taken over.
No.
Ignore me in the background.
It sounded like I just refused to answer that question. And I didn't said no, because I was saying I didn't see my against Inverness. But Lewis is probably, Lewis is definitely more qualified to talk about the Rammer, so it's alright.
Well, obviously against Inverness, I thought it was quite harsh that Levine took him off before he got the chance to get his hat-trick, because Inverness were absolutely all over the place, and it looked quite, I mean, the absolute beating of Sean Rooney and Joe Chalmers, the likes, I mean, every time, I think they actually swapped around at one point just to try and kind of handle him differently, and he was battering absolutely every day he came up against. He's just a type of player almost that we would sign, although I would think a wee bit better. He's just a big physical presence, but obviously there's a bit of football about him as well. But obviously Hamilton, well, you'd have thought if he's a big physical presence, you'd have thought Hamilton would be able to match him. But obviously I think it was quite disappointing, because Hamilton over the years have kind of prided themselves, you know, they're hard to beat, they're a bit like Motherwell to a certain extent, you know, they're hard to beat, they don't give a lot away at home and all the rest of it. And I think to give away a 4-1 beating in the first day of the season, I think that'll really gut them. And it's the kind of theme from last season as well, because Hamilton always had that thing, didn't they? Where when they were always losing from winning positions. I think they were the team in the league that was actually worse for that.
I think it's 28 points or something they dropped, which is scandalously like that's almost
aye,
like
aye.
They'd be in the top half almost definitely, wouldn't they? With that point, so just about doubled their points tally if they'd held on to all their leads.
Aye, but if they hold on to half of them, like that's so significant.
I'd have been comfortable.
Well, they've already dropped three this season, and you'll imagine that'll probably go up at some amount, because they do seem to start games really quickly. I actually had Hamilton on, they were the one team that cost me on Saturday on my coupon, because I just thought 3 o'clock Saturday, nobody's really watching, it's not on the telly, Hamilton will win, and it's at home. They always win those sort of games. Fortunately, I spoke to Sud on Saturday. Callum, you better have seen this, because this one is coming to you. Bobby Zlamal warming up before the game. Please tell me you've seen it.
Oh, right, I did. I'm not going to lie.
What is going on?
What?
What is he up to there?
Oh, right. Apologies. I thought you were giving me any trouble or something there, because you're right. Yes, I did see that. I'm not going to lie. I got a fright at first when you brought this guy's name up, because wasn't really entirely sure what you were talking about, and then you said the warm up and exactly what you were talking about. I don't know, that is absolutely insane. Some crazy shaz, that man. I don't know what he was up to. I would certainly look
possessed
in.
Possessed by the devil.
Probably possessed. Remember there was that video on YouTube saying, like,
yeah,
player possessed by Dark Angel and that, and he just didn't. I think he had an epileptic fit or something. But, anyway, rest in peace, my man. But, so, what I would say is, I would look into Craig Levein doping these guys, because that guy's doing all these cartwheels and that, and he's saying, mate, and Stephen McLean's playing an arse tough. So I think he's maybe had a word with Gary O'Connor about all the doping that was going on in Russia, about freezing their blood and all that, because that's got to be what's going on there.
I watched that the other day, by the way. Yeah, really good interview. O'Connor. Sy Ferry with O'Connor. Excellent. I've just been getting into them. I've watched four now in the last few days. O'Connor's genius. Kevin Kyle just getting $2,000 a week at Rangers is great. anyway, we'll move on to our fifth game, and it's Celtic versus Livingston, the champions, with a perfect day on their flag day. That's what I'm going to call it, the flag day. Let's talk about Kenny Miller. He played up front, obviously, with his namesake Lee, and he looks weird in a suit. That's my two takes from him. He played up front and he looks weird in a suit. Is he going to be successful at Livingston, Callum?
I think that in this day and age, you can't really get away with being a player manager. I think we were good through it, and I think Ryan came up with Craig Brewster's, well, and Martin Canning, Alex Neil, technically, but not the same as him. Craig Brewster, you know what I mean? I mean, that tells you everything you need to know. But It's a shame because I'd like him to do well. I always liked him as a player. If he was doing one or the other, but don't be surprised come November, December time, he hangs up his boots and he just concentrates on the management side of things. There's my tip.
Yeah,
that'll happen. Yeah, and you agree.
The thing
with
is,
that,
it's a really, really awkward one, isn't it? Because, you know, if it turns out that he is scoring goals but they're losing games, I think, and he thinks, well, I need to hang this up and focus on the management. You know, he's taking those goals, and you wouldn't imagine there'll be that many goals. He's taking quite a significant chunk of goals at the team, you know. But then it also gets to this thing as well, you know, if Kenny Miller is a really good striker for them, but the team's doing poor and the board maybe decide to sack him, you know, do they keep him on as a player? You know, just wait for him to get those goals from again. It's just what gets through my mind all the time. It's an awkward situation. I heard on Saturday that when he was at the game, I think that they're drilled that Miller actually takes the corners, but there was one in the first half, right in front of, or second half must have been, right in front of the standing section at Parkhead, and apparently just signaled, they were kind of waiting on him coming over, and apparently just signalled somebody else to go over and take it. So, kind of shat the bed a wee bit, I think. But
just for me, it's just like, sorry, if you hadn't finished.
No, sorry, why then?
It's just like, I don't understand. I think you can get away with sort of player manager roles at lower levels of football.
Yeah.
Yes. When you're managing a club away at Celtic Park, I think it's a bit impossible to be playing up front and then keep an eye on the game and then sort of have in the back of your mind, right, this isn't working, I'm going to change to this formation, blah, 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 blah. I just think that he needs to take a step back from the playing. I just don't think it works at all.
Here's one. See if he brought in, and I don't mean to have a go at his coaching staff and that, but like, see if Miller got the job and like, brought in, you know, like Senex, I know he was dismal at Rangers, but he can't really judge anybody, but see like, even like a Kenny McDowell or somebody, or like, you know, I'd like, no, come on, here, Kenny McDowell's a good
one. Last season coach can
a really, really, really good number two, Hunter's experience in that, then I think you can maybe get away with that, and then you can trust that guy for the sidelines. And I don't mean to have a go at his coaching staff, but like, I mean, they're not exactly the big names, you know. Obviously it worked last year, but that's because you had Hopkins, you know, that was running permanently. But see, if you've got to be a number two, you really need somebody there that you can trust in the sidelines. I'm not saying it doesn't, you know what I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't trust his coaching staff, but
I was surprised when he never brought in a name, like maybe a Durant or a Kenny or something for his Rangers days.
McCulloch,
to even kind of stand in the touchline.
Even that,
somebody
with
a bit more presence about them, you know.
Even that though, it's just like, it must be weird for the players as well, where you're like, oh well, if I don't pass to my manager here, he might not pick me for the next game. Jeez. It's all a bit of a circus, to be honest, I think.
It'd be very interesting to see properly behind the scenes, like how it's all expected to work, you know, like how he does not that we've seen a whole lot of him yet, but how he does change things in the pitch and what the players are, how the players are expected to react to him in the pitch, and
The rumour is that Amazon were interested in making a documentary about it.
Interesting.
Oh, really? Aye. Well, I'd like to see that, to be honest. Aye.
What? Why have people taken this comment seriously?
Oh, no.
Oh, fuck's
sake. Oh,
dear. I thought you were being serious, man. I thought you were actually being serious.
Amazon have got in touch with Livingston.
Aye. Well, bear in mind, Netflix had that 5-year plan hanging out with QPR and all that.
Like QPR.
I even know I like shite, man. But like, anyway, put it this way, even if it was on Amazon, you wouldn't find it because Prime's an absolute nightmare to navigate your way through. So, so even if it probably is there, you're probably right, and it's just nobody can find it anyway. Moving on.
Talking about Celtic, Ryan, Johnny Hayes started. He actually started a game for Celtic. Played for
Dead
an hour,
to
and
me.
He got an assist.
Dead to me. Do not answer questions on Johnny Hayes.
Was it not the opposite? So about how Johnny Hayes went, we are the best wishes in Aberdeen fans, but when Ryan Jack left, he was getting dogs abuse.
So answering your question, Johnny,
because he knows it's true.
No, I think good to see, to be honest. I think he's come back after his broken leg. You feared that might have been the end for him at Celtic.
Would you say that about Ryan Jack?
But aye, fair play to fair play to Hayes to get him back in the Celtic team. And I think he got the assist for the first goal, if I'm right.
Yeah, he did for Rodic. And then Rodic got his... Well, I'm giving him the assist. There's obviously the ball across from Encham. So he doesn't get an assist at all, but I've started this sentence.
Key
so
pass.
I'm too...
You right. wonder, though, key don't pass. You? Like, if key there's pass, all those rumours about Celtic re-signing Paddy Roberts. So you wonder, if they re-sign Paddy Roberts, does that leave Johnny Hayes sitting in the stand again? You know,
he's got to go out and bond Habs or something.
Aye, Aberdeen. That's quite a likely case, actually, aye.
But again, Celtic, obviously the lapse in concentration at the end, but all in all, a very comfortable victory, which is, I suppose, to be expected. And they've got, obviously, the Athens in the Champions League. Their draw, along with Hibs and Rangers, was today. If they lose, they will play Sudova or Spartak, so they're... In my opinion, and I will go out and say it, they're almost guaranteed the 99% chance that they'll be in a group stage after Europe. I think there's a good chance they'll be in the Champions League. Struggling to remember their playoff tie in the Champions League. If they beat Athens, who have they got? Videoton or Malmo, that's it.
It's Molde.
Malmo. Molde against Hibs.
Aye, sorry.
Hibs have got Zenit, Maribor. Which is... For me, Hibs have somehow managed to get a tougher tie than Celtic. I say Maribor has a lot of European experience as well. How many of our teams will be in a European group stage? Because I've heard people saying that that Rangers have got quite a favourable draw. I'm not sure how I see that with Maribor.
One.
No, I'll go with two. I think Celtic definitely will. And I think, let's just say out of Hibs or Rangers, that another one of them will. Yeah, why not? I'm being positive.
I would love to say two, but... I would love it if you had two teams in the group stages, but I can't see it. I very much hope so. Well, two or three, obviously, but I reckon only one will be there, and I probably think it'll be Celtic. But I'd love it if Rangers get into the group stages as well, and Hibs.
I agree with that. I think it'll just be Celtic. Rangers, of course, can play Niederkorn in the next round. If they win, and Niederkorn beat Ufa of Russia, which is... I mean, Rangers will probably be slight outsiders against Maribor, and Niederkorn against Ufa will be quite large outsiders, I'd imagine. So the chances are slim, but that would be brilliant. There's another way to say it. Rangers fans talking about revenge on Twitter as well was good. But
karma, best served cold.
Never learned, did they?
Anyway, we'll move on to the last game in the top flight, St Mirren Dundee. There was quite a bit of controversy about this game. Dundee fans were locked out and before the game. The game started 5 minutes early as well, for some reason. You thought they'd probably gone the other way. St Mirren said that it was because their display finished early, so they just started the game. St Mirren ended up opening the gates completely rather than the turnstiles, so... Not a great way to open the season. But onto the actual game, Dundee with lots of new players, but it was Jack Hamilton who gifted St Mirren the lead. Do you have some opinions on Hamilton, Callum?
Yes, and many of them probably can't be broadcasted on this podcast. Nah, I'm all joking. It's not that bad. Well, he is. Well, I've never really rated him as a guy. I think he just kind of, because he was young and Scottish.
As a guy.
Yeah, I think just because he was young and Scottish, people seem to think, he'll be good, and he isn't really that good. But I don't think he's that bad either, but I think he's just got to kind of carve a career out it now, and he'll end up in the Championship in a couple of years. But saying this, he'll go out and prove me wrong, and probably be the best keeper Scotland's produced since Jim Leighton, or somebody of that ilk. But nah, very horrendous goalkeeping for the goal. See, the worst thing was, he played on his last game of the season last year, and he was brilliant. He made a couple of brilliant saves. And then I was slagging him before the game, and all the guys I was with were like, oh, you obviously know nothing. I'm like, aye, well, wait come August, mate. And I was right.
There you go, you're vindicated.
Thank you, Lewis.
It was rotten.
Aye. Ryan, post-match, Alan Stubbs showed a bit of class, didn't he? he said obviously he thought Dundee were deserving of a point, which you don't hear often. And to be fair, it's not a game where Dundee completely dominated either. So were you surprised to see that? Is it a bit of class from Stubbs?
Well, maybe Stubbs could reach out to Gerrard, offer him some tips.
Oh, I knew you were going to somehow mention Gerrard.
McInnes could be doing there a bit of modesty as well, right enough. But
aye, he's very sure he's selling to me, Dale.
We'll just let the other two continue to hate Aberdeen, Johnny.
For goodness. So have we actually said any words about Alan Stubbs there? Which was the original question?
Well,
I think Alan Stubbs would just have been really, really relieved to get a win in the board, because obviously through the Betfred Cup, St Mirren looked absolutely rotten at times, and they were really struggling with all league opposition. At times, even on Saturday, it looked a wee bit doubtful, because from what I saw, I thought Dundee actually looked really good. So they tried to get the ball down, tried to play a bit of football, but and as I've said to you in the preview podcast, I didn't predict much for St Mirren this season, but I think for them to get 3 points in the board early on, that's exactly the sort of confidence boost they need. Samson saving a penalty as well, so I was pleased to see that. You know how I feel about Big Samson. I think Alan Stubbs, considering how shaky they looked in those Betfred Cup games, he would just have been delighted to get 3 points to start with.
Lewis, thank you.
Yes. Can I make a comment quickly on Dundee?
Yep.
I would just like...
I want to hear Johnny's thank you first.
I would just like...
That was it. Just thank you for actually speaking about the game. Not Gerard. Right, Callum.
I thought you were going to confess your love for Craig Sampson.
What I will say is that Dundee... If I were a Dundee fan, I would be extremely worried, because it's the same old story. It's exactly what was happening last year. Because I think Dundee are actually a good side. But they're coming out of these games. I genuinely think they did dominate it. I thought they were by far the better team and should have won the game. Never mind not even got a point. It's just textbooky last year. You know, consistently no scoring goals and good chances. Whilst creating good chances, playing good football, getting nothing for it and making stupid mistakes. And I would be really worried if I was a Dundee fan, because there's signs there that it was a good team, but there were signs there this time last year that they were a good team as well. And so to me, that's no progress. I actually feel for McCann. I think I'm one of the few that actually like him. I don't know what it is, but I like him. I think he's funny. And
he looked absolutely beat after yesterday's game.
Didn't he? It's just that when Hamilton trips the other ball, and he's on the dugout. And imagine Jack Hamilton seeing that when he gets home and watches the sports scene. Just like your manager not even looking at you after you've played the game. Not even McCann in the touchline standing, and maybe trying to G up his players are just standing. He's not even looking, he's looking at the ground with his fucking head in his hands and mental, just like. But so I actually do like McCann. I think he's got a wonderful voice as well. I could listen to him all day. But I know it's weird. I've always said that. But I think that I would be worried, because the signs are still there. They're creating chances, no scoring goals, and making stupid mistakes. No good combination.
Neil McCann ASMR.
I don't know what that means.
Anyway. It's just. Never mind. We'll move on. Hopefully there's a listener that knows what it is. I was going to say something about Dundee. Yeah, on Neil McCann, do you think that his style of play, he's trying to play too nice a style with players that can't play that style? Is that why they keep continually conceding ridiculous goals? Because it is a theme, isn't it? They just score dodgy own goals, you know, mix up at the backs.
I just don't think they rectify a lot on the training ground. Like, you see, throughout last season, they were absolutely rotten defending set pieces. Like, throughout the entire season, it never seemed to improve. And it's just it's the mistakes thing. It's concentration. It's demanding a better... Is people laughing here?
No, I was coughing.
No.
Cover your mouth.
Apologies.
I don't know. I don't think it's anything. I mean, the style of play, of course, but I think the thing that costs Dundee is their lack of concentration and individual errors. It'd be interesting to see their stats compared to other teams, but I think they'd definitely be way out at the top of the table.
I think that's obviously just the way Neil McCann likes to play. He obviously just likes to get to have it kind of passed out shot for the back and play good football on the deck. And see, ultimately, you've got to salute him for that, because there's a lot of teams in our league don't. But ultimately, at the same time, that is the way a lot of teams in our league get success. So I think, to be honest, they could probably do worse than tighten up a wee bit, maybe go a wee bit more long ball. Nobody's pretty in there, get some points on the board. And once they've mastered the basics, if you like, then they can maybe try and start and get the ball in the deck a bit more and build back up again. But they've got a foundation to do it off, you know?
Anyway, we'll move on to the Championship. And remember, if the lower leagues is not going to be as extentful, as long as usual, but there is the Lower League podcast that came out last week. I think that's episode 100. And did I say this was 212? It's 211. Is the Lower League special with myself, Tom McKinnon, and Lewis Kemp. So if you want some expert analysis, then listen to that, or don't. Listen to someone that actually knows what they're talking about, probably the Terrace or something, since we're just the Terrace Junior, the sad nobodies. Anyway, we'll talk about the Scottish Championship. I'll start. It was at Falkirk Inverness. It was better, I'll say that. Inverness went ahead after 10 minutes. Falkirk started actually pretty well. But after I looked at stats this morning, and there was 3 shots on target in the whole game. Inverness obviously with a goal. I don't remember the other 2 shots on target. There was nothing in the game. It wasn't great. It was scrappy. But that's the thing. It was probably a draw would have been a fair result. Falkirk had a goal chopped off for nothing. But there seemed to be a massive meltdown after the game from the fans, who were less than pleased. Obviously 15 new signings. You need to give them a bit of time, I think. But that was a good win for Inverness, who've got to be playoff contenders for my money anyway. Another team who could potentially be playoff contenders, another team who've had a big summer as well, Dunfermline.
Yeah.
Ryan. They won at Tannadice. It's not even a surprise anymore, is it?
No, which is quite sad now, to be honest. I think fair play, Dunfermline. You'd think, I mean, obviously we know about Dundee United's plight recently, but it's one of the tougher games in the Championship. And they've gone and, by the sounds of it, totally dominated the match. I think the 3-2 scoreline, well, the late goal by Dundee United makes it seem as if it kind of papers over a few cracks to how bad they were. And I think Dunfermline will have a good season. I think they've recruited well. But my God, Dundee United, it just continues to get worse and worse.
And Longridge, both Longridges scored in one game, which is something we probably won't see again this season. So as I say, an impressive start for Dunfermline's new recruits. I think they've actually got quite a few of them as well, and they've got Hippolyte and El Baktoui, which is pretty frightening in terms of pace, especially. It's a frightening front line. Where do you see them finishing this season, guys? I get a prediction from all 3 years on Dunfermline.
I think Dunfermline will be right up there. I could see Dunfermline getting promoted, to be honest. I watched them on the telly against Dundee in the Betfred Cup, and they were brilliant that day. I mean, they made Dundee look clueless at times. As you say, Johnny, I think Miles Hippolyte looks a brilliant player. I think he's somebody who is a wee bit almost misunderstood as a player. He needs to find the right club and the right sort of environment to play in, because there's no doubt there is skill. There is a lot of skill there. There's a lot of ability in him, but obviously he's just never really settled anywhere yet. But in a good Dunfermline team with the likes of Baktoui around about him, I think that he could be a big player for them this year.
Callum, Ryan, where will Dunfermline finish?
So I'm not going to shirk the question and say third.
I am not going to shirk the question and say they will win the league, like I predicted in my predictions.
Jesus, I didn't know you predicted that.
Yep.
No, I've got them down to 7th, I think.
Jesus wept. Jesus.
I may be 6th or something, but I just had the mid-table.
What?
And you featured on a Lower League special podcast as an expert.
Well, we'll see.
Who did you tap to win the week?
Ross County.
Ah, well.
Ross County for me are absolutely miles out ahead of the league. I think they're clear favourites.
Were they two clown shoes, man? No, I'm only joking.
What, you think Johnson's going to guide Dunfermline to the league?
No, well, what I was going to say was...
No, he's...
Correct, with Queen of the South, and he's also got a record of nearly getting teams relegated like he did with Kilmarnock. But Johnson, well, I predicted them to win the league. However, hand on heart, I think that they will start really well and then probably fade away, and that will be to do with Alan Johnson probably.
Ayr United and Lawrence Shankland. Just every week. It's every week. He's got another double.
Best striker
against Partick Thistle again. How good is he? Was already, he's been talking about a move to Dundee. Apparently, 250,000, which is a lot for Dundee. Probably not a lot for Shankland, though.
No.
He's already spoken about it. Would that be a good move for him? First of all, and second of all, how good is he? Cal.
I think he's absolutely quality. I think he's brilliant. I mean, the amount of goals he scored last season, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's in League One, but it doesn't matter what level. If you're scoring that volume of goals, then there's something there, and he's just absolutely kicked off of where he left last year. Was that, how many in all comps now? Was it, did he score two hat-tricks from the Betfred Cup?
He did, yeah. Scored a hat-trick against Morton and a hat-trick against Dennismuir, and then scored against Partick away and then scored a double against Partick.
Crazy. And these are good teams as well. Like, I mean, Betfred Cup, like, with respect to Big and Jolly, he did well, but I mean, he's thrown against weaker opposition, but at the end of the day, sound like you're dying, goal's a goal. But Shanklin scoring against, like, proper good opposition, and he's just done it in the league there, and scored two against Thistle, who Thistle have arguably got to be one of the better teams in that league this year. I think he's a cracking player, and it just kind of similar to what Lewis was talking about happily. I think he's eventually found a club now where he can settle, because he obviously was at St Mirren, never really worked out, obviously at Aberdeen for years, never made his stamp on it, just young boy right enough. But he's at Ayr United now, and he's buying in goals, and he'll do it all season if he stays.
Ryan, I'm going to come to you on this one. It's a Partick Thistle question. Thistle are playing Falkirk this weekend. It's a game that kind of interests me because it seems to be both teams are in a bit of turmoil, and neither set of fans is really, really happy at all at the moment. Thistle named four subs at Somerset Park on Saturday.
Oh my
God. What is going on there? That's just a... Surely as a fan you would rather just see kids on the bench Then you know, the opening game of the season, you've got three empty spaces on your bench.
Ball boys on the bench.
Stuart.
Aye. I think.
Stuart.
I think that Partick's problem is more upstairs, I think, at the minute. I don't think Archibald's getting as backed by the board as he has been over the last few years. I think they're a bit more wary about, I don't know, they're almost leaving him a wee bit hanging him out to dry.
I don't even know about that, sorry to go in, but O'Ware's a great signing, I think. They've kept Spittle. Slater's a good signing, I think. Kept Story, who'll be high earner. Erskine, cracking player. Chris Dillon equals goals. Still get Keon, say Cammy Bell. I think they've got a good team there. I was impressed with our business this summer, and it's done. Obviously, a lot of the club is bias, where you like say Cammy Bell and Craig Slater. I know neither did much last season, particularly Craig Slater, very, very disappointing loan spell at Dundee United. But I think their business has been good. I think O'Ware's a great signing, considering the kind of pedigree he's got in that division as well. And Archibald's got them promoted before. I think it's maybe a bit too early to you know, kind of shoot them down here, because I think they'll do all right. But that's just me. I had a kind of soft spot for Thistle. Let's say I like Archibald. I like the way they always try to play football. And I like quite a lot of their players this season as well. But I don't know. I think they'll be all right. I think it's just got to take them a couple of games to find their feet, and then they'll be sound.
I
I think the thing is, though, it's not necessarily about the quality of players they've brought in. It's as Johnny says, I mean, they're lining up in the first day of the season, we're at four players on the mm-hmm. bench, so you've got to think, once this gets to November, December, January time, you know, and injuries and suspensions and things start to set in, how they, you know, they could be struggling to field a team at some point.
Plus, salt.
I think it's a bit worrying. Yeah. I think it was, it'll have been the situation with Archibald, where, I mean, he's got such a kind of affinity with that club that he'll not have wanted. There's no way that he would have wanted to take them down after all the success he's had with them. They slip up one year, they go down. Like, I think it's more of a thing that he couldn't leave that mm-hmm. job, you know. Mm-hmm. In a way, it might even have been less cruel, if you like, if the board had just kind of sacked him, because I know it's only the first game of the season, they could welcome back, but I can't see it ending well now, to be honest, for him, because I don't know what it is. None of us do, but I think there is some sort of rot at that club somewhere, because it's funny how it's suddenly all just kind of cavered down.
Do you think it's anything to do with the name escapes me? Was it Rangers? Chief exec? Was he not Thistle and now he's a Scottish chief exec now?
Oh, aye. Ian Maxwell.
Aye, I mean, that could maybe be a factor, aye. I don't know.
It could well be, aye. Maybe there is sort of unrest in the boardroom or some sort, and that's filtering down. There's got to be something, because it's funny how the wheels have fell off their car.
Anyway, on to, that's, as I said there, four subs for Partick, and Ross County, who you've just laughed at, the prospect of them winning the league. Their bench, Stelios Dimitriou, Tony Dingwall, Ryan Dow, Brian Graham, Davis Keeler-Dunn, Harry Payton. Now that's strength, that's depth. And they scraped past Ross County. They scraped past Alloa on the opening day.
Yeah.
Where do you guys have Ross County then? If you don't think they're going to win the league, for me they've got clearly the strongest squad. And obviously they're backed, as you say, not and maybe a bit more unlike Park Thistle. They are very well backed as well in terms of cash. For me, they've got the strongest squad. Where do you guys put them?
I think they'll be right up there. They will be thereabouts. It's an absolute certainty, but I just don't think that they will go up out of that league this year automatically anyway. I think they'll be in the playoffs, I think that's for sure. But no, I would favour the likes of Dunfermline over them, just because I've watched them and I was quite impressed with them. Whereas, I mean, I know you can look at Ross County's squad on paper and it does look good and it looks strong, that the fact you've got like Dimitriou and things on the bench, but ultimately, I mean, they scraped past Alloa the weekend, and Alloa are probably going to be the weakest team in that division.
Alloa also only had four subs on Saturday, by the way, and one of them was Jim Goodwin.
Oh my goodness.
Who's also the manager, so and there's a keeper on there as well. Jesus, so unless Goodwin subbed himself on, he's sent in off. Trouble. I think the Bulgarian guy playing for them, I think he was a trialist against Falkirk, but I could easily be wrong, because there was a couple of players there that he was speaking to after the game who were definitely foreign, and they were just coming over. I thought they were from Cyprus, but so I know he's got quite a lot of trialists, and I think he's had about five or six trialists in that game, so there maybe is something in the works. Anyway, Ross County, Callum, where do they finish?
Well, see, it's funny because, like, obviously I kind of laugh, but it's more to wind up you and your Highland bias. You look at that team and it's an excellent team. It's a very, very strong team for that division. But yeah, and I'm going to steal Johnny's thunder here by taking his Paul Hartley quote, if that's okay. Or would you like to say it yourself?
On you go.
Well, Paul Hartley said on Saturday after the game that Scottish Championship has got to be one of the toughest leagues in Europe this year. Not just Northern Europe, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, if we're watching. I think that kind of sums it up, because when I was doing my predictions, I was like, no, I've got a few wee kind of inside tips, I think, for the Championship. And then I looked, and then it was a process of elimination where teams were just finishing, because, like, there genuinely is, like, and I know Ayr United just won 2-0 against Thistle, and I think Ayr will actually have a decent season, but take Ayr and Alloa out of the equation, right? Any one of those eight teams are got to be there or thereabouts. Like, when you look at the kind of history of the league and stuff, like, Morton will do well this year with Ray McKinnon there. I think he'll do a cracking job. Obviously, Gary Naismith, like Queen of the South and that. And they're like the lesser teams, you know. And never mind, we have Ross Counties, Inverness, Thistle. I don't know, Dunfermline, I think it's got to be a really, really tough league. Falkirk have regressed so much though, when you consider that where they were on the verge of Premier League, Premiership football a couple of years ago, but it's got to be a cracker of a league. But I think you'll start to see it take shape, obviously, after the first round of fixtures, the same way any other league, and there'll be a few surprise teams there. Because as much as Dundee United are a basket case, you still kind of write them off, like getting the playoffs, you know. So, I know probably Tom McKinnon will dispute that, with certain Shabba Laszlo being there. But I think it will be a cracking league this year. And I think Hartley is right, it will be the toughest league in Europe this year.
There you heard it, the Scottish Championship, the toughest league in Europe. The last game of the Championship was 2-2 between Morton and Queen of the South. Morton were 2-0 up in that game, but Queen of the South came back and it ended in a draw. You said Ray McKinnon's side will have a good season there. Callum, quickly, where do you think those two will finish this year? Both mid-table again?
I would say so. As I say, I've not got my predictions handy at the moment, but I wouldn't read too much into them anyway, because as I just said, I think any of the eight teams can come anywhere. Air United, I don't know. The only thing I'm convinced about, is Alloa. I think we'll finish bottom. I just kind of see them, well respected, you know, budget wise, you can't compete with any of these teams. I think we'll finish bottom. Other than that, it's just a lottery. And I think Morton maybe just finish outside the playoffs. And I'd probably go the same with Queen of the South. I think those two will be kind of tit for tat this year. I think the two of them are really kind of similar. I don't even know why I think that. I group the two of those teams together, and I think that it'll be tit for tat between both clubs this season. As you just seen with the draw there, I think either way, and I would probably put Falkirk into that category as well.
Moving on to League One, and as I say, we'll just quickly bash through these two leagues, because we're running out of time. But there is the lower league special that we did last week, episode 211. If you want to get an in depth, I think there's about half an hour on each league.
The commission, Johnny.
The result for me of the SPFL weekend is Montrose 0, Arbroath 4. Montrose's flag day. obviously, unfurling the League Two flag for the first time they've won a league title since the first time they've won a league title in decades, and the first time they've been up since 1993, and it's been destroyed by their biggest rivals.
It's a derby, that game, is it not?
It is, yeah, biggest rivals. There's 12 derbies for each team in Angus this season, with Brechin and Forfar as well. But Bobby Lynn double, Kane Hester returning to Montrose as well. I don't think he actually played for Montrose, he's just from Montrose, I think. And Wallace with the fourth. So that's a crushing win to open the season for Arbroath. Dumbarton coming straight down, and they're going to be up there this season, surely. 2-0 win at East Fife. Mm-hmm. The continuity with the manager, and obviously quite a lot of turnover in players. But there seems to have been quite a good summer recruit at Dumbarton. I'd be surprised if they weren't up there. Airdrie, is this their year? 3-1 win at Forfar, 3 goals in 6 minutes, Conroy, McIntosh and Vittoria. Forfar are a real difficult one to assess. At Falkirk they were brilliant in the first half, should have been 3-0 up, and that's not an exaggeration at all. But were defeated. I've seen Airdrie at Falkirk as well. They lost 3-2, but looked great going forward. So expect a lot of goals from Airdrie, maybe concede a lot as well. They've played the most bizarre high line I've ever seen. Stenhouse Muir won on their return, Brechin coming down from the Championship. These two were two leagues apart last year, but I think most people think they'll be, there won't be much between the two this year. I think pretty much everyone thinks that both teams will struggle. Stenny Hill held on with 10 men for the full second half, and Brechin's run without a league win extends to what seems like half a decade now. That'll be 37 at least, without a league win. Gibbons sent off, but that was fine for Stenny. Muir held on second half, and still untroubled as well. and Wraith. I've left them to last for a reason. Ryan.
What? Wraith, you have them where?
I've left them to last. I've left this game to last for a reason. Why have I left this game to last?
I have no idea.
Oh my god, man. Have you not invited to some exclusive
events? Oh aye, oh aye.
Oh, right, I see.
Oh aye, that's...
Aye, right. The biggest news coming from Wraith this week is the mobile game.
Yeah, you've heard of FIFA, you've heard of PES, you've never heard of Wraith FC having their own football game. It's here at Bashier out of the gaming market, and it's going to be announced on Burstball on Thursday. There you go. You can't do your job, Ryan. 7 o'clock and Thursday, Wraith's game coming out.
Yes, well, it's me and Johnny attending, so we will update you, Julie.
You sound excited about it. Quite excited, to be fair. I've not got a clue what to expect. I don't really know why we've been invited, to be fair, but we're grateful for the invite. Extremely grateful. And we'll do our best to be responsible for a couple of hours.
I promise.
League 2, Ryan, your hometown city. It's been well represented in League 2. Edinburgh City with a 4-0 win. It's Albion Rovers. They're going down, aren't they?
Staggering. I was out to their substitute goalkeeper last night.
Albion Rovers?
What, no, Edinburgh City.
Oh, right, were you?
Yeah. It says that the in camp at Edinburgh City believe they can get promoted this year.
Interesting. Ooh. They're one of those clubs, though, that I know I kind of slide them and I've tapped them and get in the first. It always was going to be a case of just kind of staying up for the first couple of years and then having a go at it, because obviously there will be a prestigious club, you know. Is Jeffrey still there, director of football?
Don't know why.
No, because that just shows the ambition, man, and the great young talent. The
ambition for what?
The ambition to compete at the highest level.
I think they have recruited well as Blair Henderson with a hat-trick in his debut. Good signing from Annan. He didn't actually score a great amount last season, but, well, I've just looked at that there and he actually did score 16. He must have scored a lot at the end of the campaign.
Whereas when you look at like Albion Rovers, I mean, they've got a manager in from the juniors, you know, and if you look at their kind of recruitment, they have just signed a lot of players from the junior leagues. You know, there's very few people with know-how of the league in the Albion Rovers squad, so I would predict them to be right down there as well.
Yeah, they've just got one player from last season that's still there, and that's over the age of 20.
Fisher?
And just looking at it, Fisher's the only one. Henderson did score 6 in his last 4 games last season, so that will explain, that a little bit.
You touched on it there, but it's just, I do honestly think that Edinburgh City's recruitment has been fantastic for a club of their stature. They've kind of taken that to the next level. I mean, they've got in Conrad Balatoni, I mean, who we all know.
On that, the most boring Twitter.
Danny Handling as well.
Sorry?
Conrad Balatoni, go and read his Twitter. It's funny. It's the most boring thing you ever read, but continuous apology.
Oh dear. Calling out Conrad Balatoni on the podcast.
Right, we'll continue with League 2. There's just top-class goal scorers just netting goals in League 2 all over the place. David Goodwillie got one in Clyde's 2-0 winning against Cowdenbeath. And Rory McAllister scored for Peterhead against Queen's Park, the Nazis' Queen's Park. Berwick beat Stirling. A great win for Berwick, actually. 3-1 they were at home to Stirling, which is ridiculous when you think about it. Like, why did we not win money on that? And Annan and Elgin drew 1-1, which isn't too bad for Elgin considering that it's about a 700 mile round trip.
Is it the longest trip in football?
So there's your League 2. What's the Russian game again that's like 3/4 of the way around the world?
Oh, you've told me about that. It's absolutely mental. Do the away fans actually travel to it?
I highly doubt it.
part.
Would you travel badge on if he did though? A week to get there.
Yep, I would do anything to see Kelly in Europe. I would walk. And break down somewhere.
Okay.
Walk to
we
bed,
have some
mate.
Questions. We've actually got a reasonable amount of questions. 5 questions.
Let's go.
So we're going to bash through them, and you're only getting one. We're getting a question each.
What?
Oh,
alright.
So, 2 of them are similar.
Ask yourself.
The snowman asks, Callum, you can answer this. The snowman's coming to see you on Thursday.
Yes, I was going to say that.
And he asks.
Give him a shout out. Yep. Obviously, you would prefer to see hunters of grass parts, but a lot of teams like Aki's and ourselves are making money off it, you know what I mean? Like, kids are training on it and stuff. Like, I don't think they're that bad. I mean, I know Russian football's a different kettle of fish, and the parts over there are like phenomenal. But I mean, I don't have these discussions in Russia. A bit more forward thinking. As I say, I get the generation thing as well. Bring in my own Sunday league team here. I know that sounds ridiculous, but boys now my age and that, I mean, half the boys don't want to play in grass. There's their 3G. Like, I know that's different between like amateur, poorly maintained council parts and professional football pitches, but at least 3G, you always, when people say the bounce isn't good on them and all that, I don't know, I think you always get the same game and it encourages good football, which is the opposite of what people say. I think you're always likely to play with the bonded deck on it, but people dispute that.
Didn't they notice that the AstroTurf pitch at Hamilton looked like they were playing in concrete?
There was
wee black bits on it. It was just like a solid green base. It was bizarre.
I actually thought it looked nice for some reason. I don't know why, man. I quite liked it. It's
aesthetically pleasing, isn't it? But it just didn't look like an AstroTurf pitch. It looked like it was like they were playing in concrete. It was like a cage.
It looked like the Grade 1 AstroTurf pitches that one of them existed in Galston for any East Ayrshire listeners up until like 3 years ago and people still rented it out. I don't know why. It was one of those absolute terrible things, which basically was concrete.
2 questions left. One is for you, Ryan. Will John McGinn stay with Hibs for the rest of the season? Lord O'Connor asks.
No.
Will he go to Celtic?
I don't know. I just think that, I mean, I know a lot of my friends said that similar situation to Casey, that they'd rather keep McGinn and not get any money for him. But can Hibs afford to turn down a £4 million offer for a player and then get nothing for him in the future? I don't know. But I do think that he will be off at least by January.
That's what I like to hear, a bit of a bold claim. And the last question is for yourself, Lewis, and it's a Motherwell question, again from Lord O'Connor. Right. Will Stevie Robinson have anything left of his £1 million transfer money on Cedric Kiprae to spend?
Do I think he'll get any of it to spend?
To spend, yeah.
Well, it's always the case when teams like Motherwell get that kind of money. It's a lot of it is used for
Burrows.
keeping up the pie addiction. a lot of it is used to try and actually keep the club in business, you know. I mean, we're a fan-owned club and everything now, and that's very well documented, but we've still got a loan outstanding to the Welsh Society, and I think we've actually still got a wee bit of money owed to John Boyle as well, and it's very manageable. I mean, it doesn't put the club on their uppers or anything, but I think when we get any sort of significant transfer revenue in, I think a good chunk of that does actually go to sort of repaying these loans, and then a good bit of it goes to just sort of, you know, running costs. In fact, we've been quite fortunate, obviously, with the 2 cup finals last year, and then we're getting this £1 million for Kiprae and the Louis Moult transfer fee as well. We've been lucky to, you know, they've been quite a good source of income over the last season or so, but I think a lot of that is going to sort of off the field improvements at the club, which have badly been needed, and paying off some of the kind of manageable debts that they have.
Have to go to bed. So,
cheers, Johnny. Thanks for having us on. I'll sleep soundly tonight.
Thanks very much to all 3 of you. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, and again, as I say, one of the longest podcasts we've had out in a while. But that's just because we've got the football fever. It's back, and we'll be back again next week with episode 213. Thanks very much for listening. Cheers.